You have 10:15. Having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. We have three bills before us, and as a courtesy to Chair Detmer, since Representative Wills is on the committee, we're going to hear the Detmer bill first, which would be House File 137. And I have three people listed to testify, a Ralph Donay, Jerry Kaiser, and Tommy Johnson. Just kind of take a census here right now. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns? Just to kind of see where we're at. So, Representative Detmer, when we do have a quorum, I'll officially move your bill. Representative Detmer, please present House File 137 to the committee, and then we'll get into testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. And this is an issue that we've been working on for several years. And House File 137 is a bill that allows all forms of federal military retirement pay to be subtracted from income tax calculations up to $30,000. The bill, as it originally was written, repealed the existing tax credit, but we amended that so that it does not repeal that tax credit, because some certain disabled veterans actually would come out better with that legislation. Last year we had similar language in 2004 that was added to the supplement tax bill, and on a 68-55 vote on the House floor, and then through a removal of a subsequent delete all amendment, it didn't stay on that omnibus bill. The bill makes federal retirement pay and pensions subtractable for income tax purposes, and any individual who receives a pension or retirement pay with the federal government is eligible for the subtractions, including early retirements. There was a group during the Clinton years that were forced to retire with 18 years, so they would be included in this piece of legislation. Also, medically retired would also benefit from this legislation, and those receiving survival benefits. A subtraction of $1,500 a year, or we could just say $30,000 a year, is what would be subtracted when you sit down with your tax person and do your taxes. The bill also, according to House research, 15 states fully exclude military retirement pay from taxable income. 11 states exclude a fixed amount, and 9 states include some pension income, including military retirement pay, subject to income or language limitations. I'd like to just share the latest information I got from House Research, legislative analyst Nina Manzi. Of the 50 states and the District of Columbia, 9 do not have the general income tax, obviously. Of the remaining 42 states, 35 exempt at least a portion of the military retirement pay, and 3 provide credits for retirement income. 2 of the 3 states that provide credits also allow limited exemption. This leaves about 6 states that do not exempt any portion of military retirement pay since the tax year 2009. Minnesota has provided a credit for military retirement pay. Now, that was a credit of $750, and that was phased out after a person started to phase out after the person with income was $30,000 or more, and at $37,500, then it was eliminated. So there's a small group that actually benefited from that legislation. 15 states fully exempt military retirement income and taxable income, and 11 states exclude fixed amounts of military retirement income. And 9 states, including Minnesota, as I mentioned, exclude some of the pension income, including military retirement income, subject to income and age limitations. Now, Mr. Chair and members, those that have full amount of military retirement pay from taxable income are Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, and Wisconsin. There's 5 states that fully exclude retirement income on taxable income from military. Also, specific exclusions for government pension income. There's six states: Alabama, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, New York, and Oregon. And we could go on with the other types of benefits that other states provide. Sometimes people ask me, well, how do you figure out your military retirement? Well,
Representative Demmer, how do you figure out your military retirement?
Good question. And I'd like to share that with the committee. I shared it with the with my committee, the division. If you're on active duty, you get one retirement point per day that you're on active duty, so 365 points a year. And after 20 years, but you have to have 20 years in. Or if you're medically retired, you have to have 20 years in. Because if you get out before that 20-year mark, you don't have a retirement. You could put in 16, 15, 17, whatever, unless you have some other type of savings account that you might have. You don't draw a military retirement without 20 years or more. So after you accumulate those points, you then, depending on your rank, there's a formula that the military uses, the Department of Defense uses, to figure out how much you would get per point. The higher rank, and number of years that you're in, you would get a higher number, like 45 cents or 50 cents a point or whatever it would be. And as a Guard and Reserve, you're also on a point system, but you have to have 50 points, 50 good points to have a good retirement year. So if you miss drills or if you don't go to annual training, you could have a year but not have it benefit you for retirement. So you have to have 50 good points. You get 48 points for being a member in the Guard, the Reserve, plus you get 15 points for your annual training. So it's pretty easy to get your a good retirement year with the points. But again, you have to, as a Guard and Reserve component, you don't draw a retirement until age 60. So active component, as soon as you get your 20 years in, you can start drawing. And most of those men and women are in their 40s if they went in right after high school. So, but as a Guard and Reserve, you have to wait until you're age 60 to start drawing any type of your military retirement. So I would like to, turn it over to some of our people here that would like to testify, and then be open for some questions, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Chair Detmer. Do we have? I don't see Mr. Donay here.
No.
Is he? Will he be coming later? Or?
No.
Okay. Let's go to Mr. Kaiser.
Yes, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. I'm a disabled Vietnam combat veteran, and I'm would not be a recipient of this particular thing because I only did 3 years in the U.S. Army, two of them in Vietnam. This is not just a gift to the retirees. It's a jobs program. You know, Minnesota and started the Yellow Ribbon Project, which is a process where reintegrating these veterans who have served our country recently. And Minnesota started it. Part of the process of being in the Yellow Ribbon is to facilitate getting people back into the workforce. Those who have served their country are over 20 years are entitled to this particular bill that Representative Detmer has done. The process is that, in our mind, is that we're trying to get the workforce of these highly trained individuals who've been in it over 20 years. In order to be an enlisted person over 20 years, you got to have at least a college education now. A man or woman with 20 years of service is usually a lieutenant colonel or a major, and they're mid-level management people in the United States military. Those are the kind of people that we need back in Minnesota industry to facilitate the growth that we have in the state. And with the downsizing of the military, which is going to be happening in the next number of years, that we want to be able to reintegrate these folks back into Minnesota. When they get their retirement time to come up, they have a process where they go to the retirement board and there find out all the states that this is the best place to retire. Well, Minnesota is on the bottom of the list, and most of the time the only reason they come back here is because their wife or husband wants to move back here. This is a process which would help us try to bring in those kind of people into Minnesota. Instead of them coming to Minnesota, getting a job and living over in Wisconsin where they don't have to pay those taxes, it just is, seems like the right thing to do. The governor of the state of Minnesota, the president of the United States, the Yellow Ribbon Process, they're all saying that we need to help bring Minnesota veterans into back into the workforce. This is another process and a caveat for them to come back to the state of Minnesota. There's always a projection how much it's going to cost us in the far as the state of Minnesota, but there's never a projection about how much it's going to gain, because these men and women are going to be mid-level management people. Their wife probably is going to be able to work. They're going to be in their 40s and early 50s. They're not going to be retiring on that pension that they have because they're only getting 50% of their base rate. It just seems like a proper thing to do for us, the state of Minnesota. We're trying to pass bills that are going to have give credit to companies for hiring Minnesota veterans, tax deduction, other processes that we're trying to do. This would be just another leg in that stool to make it a proper thing for these men and women to come back to the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. I will officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order as we have a quorum. I will move House File 137, so it's officially before us. Representative Lothric, would you be willing to move the minutes of February 5th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections to the Lothric motion? Hearing none, all favors say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, thank you, Mr. Kaiser. If you could maybe stick around. Any questions? Well, why don't we go to questions for Mr. Kaiser right now, if anyone has questions. Okay, then I believe, thank you, Mr. Kaiser, for your testimony. Then I believe we have a Tommy Johnson. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tommy Johnson. I live in Eden Prairie. I served 3 years active duty in the Army. I would not personally benefit from the bill that's before you today. What I did want to talk to you is about how this bill will affect my family personally. My oldest daughter married an officer in the Air Force. They met in UMD. He was going to ROTC. He's active duty. My youngest daughter is an officer in the Air Force. She went through ROTC up there. Jerry Kaiser mentioned that when people are separating from the service after 20, 25 years, that they are being counseled about the tax climate in the various states, and people are choosing where to retire somewhat based off of that. Well, I'm here to tell you that my daughter and my son-in-law are both junior officers, and they're talking about that right now, that they're not going to be coming back to Minnesota when it comes time to retire because of the tax climate here. This kind of bothers me because my wife is telling me that if they don't come back here, we're going to be moving where they are because she wants to be around our grandchildren. So not only if we don't make this reform, are we going to be losing people that grew up in Minnesota, went to Minnesota colleges, and not coming back, but I'm sure I'm not the only one that will probably end up having to leave this state. It seems to me that when I hear talk about targeted tax cuts, this bill makes a lot of sense, because shouldn't we give the tax cut to the people that were the targets and bring them back to our state? Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Thank you, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Chuck Jones, and I'm the State Department Commander for the Military Order of the Purple Heart.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Three-time wounded Vietnam veteran, and I don't fall into the category of getting any kind of retirement benefits or whatnot. But I'm here to testify that there are a lot of members in my organization and the other veterans organizations that are looking at this tax thing here for Minnesota. We're probably high on the end of taxes and low on the end of doing a lot of things for veterans. And like the previous people that stated here, people are looking at different states, and the amount that would be given to veterans that are retired would come back three and four times full, just like the last man stated, that people don't want to come here because they're looking at Wisconsin, Iowa, the Dakotas, that all have this type of a benefit for their retired personnel. And along with that goes their sons and daughters, and then you're going to reap the benefits of their children when they get into the workforce. So the amount of money coming back would more than substantiate the money that you'd be putting out or giving to these veterans that put in 20 plus years. Because I know in my organization, there are veterans that came back, they did 20 years, and they got out, and then they retired again at other jobs. But the call of grandchildren and children alone is calling them and making them look at the benefits that are given to these people. And in my organization, I don't call them benefits. I call them entitlements, because when these people stood up and raised their right hand for this country and for everyone in this room, at least you could do is give a little bit back to them so that they can be thanked for what they have done and put on the line for your country. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Any questions for Mr. Jones? Okay. Any closing remarks? Is there anyone else in the audience that's come in that wishes to testify for the bill or with concerns? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for Representative Detmer for bringing this bill forward. It's a very good bill. I was just looking at some notes that I have on the bill, and it says nationwide military retirees make up 0.62 of a percent of the population. Yet, if within Minnesota, they make up 0.32 percent of the population. So, if Minnesota has the same average percentage or density of veterans in our state as other states do, that suggests to me that it's possible that somewhere in the neighborhood of half of our veterans upon retirement have moved out of the state. Is that kind of what that says to you?
Well, just
Chair Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, maybe just to add on to that, you know, we have 370,000 veterans that live in Minnesota, but only 4.7% of those are retired veterans. So basically we have about 18,000 veterans, somewhere around 18,000 veterans that actually are eligible for retirement that live in Minnesota. And a large percentage, about 60% of those are actually 60 years and older. So that tells me another thing is that are the younger ones that are ones that are just getting out at the age of 40 or so, are they staying in Minnesota or are they coming back to Minnesota? So that's just to add on to what you mentioned. I think we can do a better job than that compared to the states that are around us. And I had an interesting talk with Governor Walker during the groundbreaking ceremony of the bridge down in Stillwater. And we started, I started talking right about what Wisconsin is doing for veterans, and we had a good discussion, and he said, well, Governor Walker, with kind of a smile on his face, he said, well, what I'd like to do in Wisconsin, just get rid of income tax. And he kind of had a smile on his face, and I looked at where the bridge is going to be going in, and I said, well, that bridge is going to be awful busy going from west to east, and we kind of had a chuckle over that. But there's a reality there that people do look at where they want to live and raise their family or even retire based on the tax structure of that state. So that's a reality that we can't look back. And when you bring a veteran into your state, what do they bring? As mentioned before, they bring a lot of skill sets they've learned after 20 years. They also bring their retirement pay, comes into the state. They bring their health care, the TRICARE. They bring their educational benefits, the Montgomery GI benefits. Now that comes in, all that money, that's federal money coming into the state. And they're going to buy homes, might start companies, they'll get jobs. And you hear it on the radio all the time with the military affairs. General Nash talks about hiring a veteran. They have these skills that companies want. And I hope that we can do something, at least get our foot in the door and get something started. The bill that's before you, committee members, is a bill that we can work with the numbers, because I put a, I don't like to call it a cap, but I put a cap of $30,000 that when you do your taxes, you can subtract. We can reduce that amount to work with the chair of the tax committee. We can work on these numbers and try to get something started this year for our veterans. Thank you.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Detmer, thank you again for bringing this bill forward. And I would suspect we could increase the number too, Chair Detmer. Would that work as well for you?
Chair Detmer.
As always, Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski. Yeah, it's a number we just started with, that $30,000, and then we can take a look at where we sit in our budget, with the tax chair, what he wants to do, and what this committee wants to do.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Chair
Drazkowski. I have Representatives Loeffler, Lesch, and Earhart. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Detmer. I appreciate your explanation of how pensions are calculated. I didn't realize that's how it worked. And I'm wondering whether or not you get any points for actual combat service, where you're actually exposed to one of those life-threatening situations. In my value system, that ought to be in there, and I'm wondering if that is a component.
Chair Detmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, you get 1 point a day, whether you're in Guard or Reserve, but you do get combat pay. When you're in a combat zone, there's extra pay for you there. But in terms of retirement, you get 1 point a day along with any, like if you're also airborne, there's some extra pay there for jumps or for airborne school and so forth. But there is some combat pay when you're in a combat zone.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's disappointing to me, because quite honestly, those are the people who actually have put their life on the line. And my experience has been that many of those are the ones who paid some of the biggest prices, and they drop out long before 20 years and spend maybe the next 20 years trying to figure out how to adjust to some of what they've exposed to. I mean, we know a lot of our homeless and chemically dependent people are disproportionately veterans, but most of them have not stayed that long, and yet they have really contributed and paid a bigger price than some people who may have had more lighter duty assignments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Loeffler. Chair Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And neighbors, I just wanted to highlight, in light of Representative Drazkowski's numbers, I think one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of veterans is because Minnesota doesn't have any large military posts, let alone big deployment posts, which, credit those Southern senators between the 50s and the 70s, made sure that none of them got closed in the South, which is where you got to go now and sweat it out during basic training most of the time. But Minnesota does not have a lot of those. In the last committee this was in, I heard that it was 4% of our veterans in Minnesota that were going to get this. Other states, I think it's 20%, so maybe it's Representative Detmer's intent that we get a little bit higher towards that 20% instead of the 4%. But in light of Representative Loeffler's statements, I do have some concerns that this would only be available to a very, very small percentage of our veterans. And wondered, Mr. Chair, if I may ask Representative Detmer, have you considered any ways to make, if we're going to vote for a tax benefit for our veterans, any ways to make sure that this got extended to all of our veterans and not just the 4% or the 15%?
Chair Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lesch, that's a good question. I guess we'll have to take a look at the cost of extending it out to all veterans, whether it's you did one enlisted or two enlisted. But the gentleman that came up here today said Neither of them will benefit from this bill, but they feel it's important for other reasons, for those that were able to stay in for 20 years. And right now, with the downsizing of our military, many of them are forced out that want to stay in for a career. And we're just saying that maybe this is a good benefit, that those were able to stay in for 20 years and made it a career, and now in a second career, and hopefully that second career will be here in Minnesota. But that's a good question, and maybe that's something we could look at. At least let's start something with those that were able to stay and serve for 20 years. And many of our Guard and Reserve have had 3, 4, 5 deployments. Right now, the federal government relies a lot on our Guard and Reserve components because our active duties force has been reduced. It's one of the that's at smallest since way back when. And I think we need to take a look at what's going on at the federal level and utilizing our Guard and Reserve like they've never used them before in the last 15 years. So it's during the Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, Desert Storm. Our men and women serving in the Guard and Reserve have seen a lot of active duty. And I have two sons that spent 3 deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. One is in the Guard now and one is still serving active duty. And they live on the East Coast because of where the station that they're at right now. But like some of the other people here, if you have grandkids, you would like to see them maybe come back to Minnesota. That's a little selfish comment there.
It sure was. Chair Lesh.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that, Representative Detmer. And I, hearing the testimony of one of the testifiers describing that his kids are junior officers, and I thought to myself, well, I hope they're good, because, you know, if you're a junior officer, you're in probably 4 to 7 years under your belt, depending on if you went green to gold or something, and that bottleneck is getting squeezed once you go to field grade. Mm-hmm. You can resign your commission and go back in as enlisted if you wanted to, but the prospects of some of these young people right now that have given so many years of their life and the hope they'll get to their 20, mm-hmm. and the way that we're downsizing now, there are some quality people that don't stand the chance of even getting to their 20 because of how much we're shrinking. And so I think about that, the hopes of the expectation that your kid who's a junior officer is somehow going to make it to their 20 in this climate. I don't know how realistic that is, yeah. But in any case, thank you for your testimony, Representative Detmer. I think it's great.
And Representative Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that they bring a lot of skill sets to the retired veterans, and I kind of think you mentioned guys that jump out of planes, the airborne, and a tank commander, let's say. What kind of skill sets would they bring that would be advantageous to Minnesota?
Chair Detmer.
Well,
you must have others.
Earhart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, I think we passed some legislation last session for those that are military police. Now they can come into the state of Minnesota, take their exam, and they're eligible to be hired by law enforcement organizations, cities and counties. And EMT, we're looking at maybe doing some legislation to those that are combat medical people, that maybe they can come into the state and become EMT people. There's a lot of different, you have operators of heavy equipment, truck drivers, you got engineers, you got all different types of MOSs, military occupational specialties that we have in the military today. Those skills can be transferred over to the public sector, and you have a lot of military personnel who are teaching courses in the military schools. Many of them can come into education and become teachers. There's all sorts of jobs that are available for the skill sets that you've learned after 20 years in the military, or maybe just one enlistments. Aircraft pilots, helicopter pilots, fixed wing pilots. The Navy has all sorts of MOSs also, the Air Force, Marines. So there's a great source of job people out there that can fill positions here in the public sector.
Chair Earhart.
I have a question on tax, but remind me, because when I was in the service, I was blowing things up, and I couldn't think of anything where that would be useful except once in a while. And then it probably wouldn't be a good idea.
Okay.
What the question I have on the tax thing here is, Mr. Chairman, is that it looks to me like you can deduct more than your actual pension. That's possible because you might have years of service that would be 20 or whatever, but your pension is only, this applies to all pension, not just military pension, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair, that's
so
correct.
That's kind of an advantage to this situation that allows more than just what you are earning as a military pension. You can then apply that to your Social Security or whatever else your pension might be, I think. Am I correct there?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, a good question. The way it's set up, there's a cap of $30,000 that you can, when you sit down with your tax person, you can deduct from your gross income. Some of your lower ranking enlisted or non-commissioned officers, that might be more than what their retirement pay is. So that's the way the bill is written right now. And again, as I mentioned earlier, that when I sit down with the tax chair, we can take a look at that and see how it fits into the budget and what we can do for our veterans.
Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dittmer, do you have any idea about the spread on people that veterans were talking about that retire? Do you have any idea numbers-wise?
Chair and Representative Earhart, what's good about this, you're going to see about five different bills come through probably the Tax Committee on this issue. What's different about House File 137 is that it treats all ranks the same. Whether you're enlisted or a non-commissioned officer, an officer, all ranks are treated the same. You have the same amount that you can deduct when you do your taxes. Some of the other bills, if you're a higher-ranking officer, of course, you get a better. If you totally eliminate taxing the military income, retirement pay, the higher-ranking officers would get a better break on their taxes. This one treats everybody the same.
Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I was just looking for actual numbers. Do people that have military retirement plans, do they retire at $12,000 a year or $50,000 or somewhere in between, or is there any average or some kind of range?
I think it depends on how much, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, depends on how many points you've accumulated. It could range from $1,000 a month to more than that, I would say.
Okay.
Chair Earhart.
Thank you. That's enough.
Okay, with that, does the department wish to testify on this bill or make any comments as a resource? Okay. Thank you very much. I will lay House File 137 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Dettmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Okay, item next, the rest of the day is Representative Wills Day. We have a couple bills from Representative Wills. Representative Wills, you can move whichever bill you'd like to take first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Representative Dettmer's bill was a perfect lead into my House File 10, so we'll start with that bill.
Okay, Representative Wills moves House File 10.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have House File 10 before you today, which I believe leads a perfect segue from Representative Dettmer's bill, because his bill was highlighting the importance of making it more viable for veterans to stay here in Minnesota, and this is the next step to help veterans find jobs here in Minnesota, looking at private sector jobs. So I want to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to present today, and I wanted to just give a little background in why I believe this bill is important, and especially for the state of Minnesota. So what the bill does is it would provide non-refundable tax credits to employers who hire veterans in the state of Minnesota, so specifically private sector employers. And a little background on the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate for veterans in Minnesota is currently at 5% for all veterans and 8.8% for post-9/11 veterans, whereas our current unemployment rate for their civilian counterparts is at 3.7%. So you can see that there is a disparity there between our veterans and our civilians in finding jobs here in Minnesota. So as our service members come back to Minnesota from serving overseas, or if they're serving even just out of the state, they're struggling to find jobs and reintegrate into civilian life. I personally have extended family members who serve in the military or have served, and as a state representative, I represent the cities of Apple Valley and Rosemount, which are both beyond the Yellow Ribbon cities, and Rosemount is home to the Red Bulls 34th Infantry Division. As a progressive state, Minnesota needs to do a better job of taking care of our veterans and making Minnesota a veteran-friendly state for our service members to come home and start civilian life by becoming Minnesota taxpayers in the private sector, rather than having them depend on state benefits or leave to go to a more veteran-friendly state. House File 10 has broad bipartisan support with several Republicans and Democrats on the bill, and Senator Chuck Wieger is carrying the companion in the Senate, and they've already had their hearing in the tax committee, so it's moving in both bodies. And I really believe that this is a nonpartisan issue, and I've seen that evidenced by the support that I've gained over the last couple of years. And I was very grateful that this bill, as House File 532, was included in our House Tax Omnibus Bill. So thank you, Representative Lencheski, for that. And unfortunately, it was stripped out in the conference committee with the Senate, but, you know, we can't control the Senate. So I'm back again with the proposal, and wanted to point out, I have a couple of handouts that are being passed out right now, a letter of support from former Secretary of State Mark Ritchie, who spoke in support of the bill at the press conference 2 years ago, and also supplied this letter. So because the language of the bill from 532 and 10, House File 10, are exactly the same, I believe it's still applicable today. And also there's a letter in support from several different businesses around the state supporting House File 10. The bill also has support from several veterans and veterans advocacy groups, such as the Military Action Group, the United Veterans Legislative Council, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, the Association of the United States Army. And I also have a few testifiers here today to explain some of the benefits of this bill. And I have here Dennis Davis, who worked with me closely on making sure the language would be beneficial to veterans as well as employers. And I would like to have him share his testimony.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wells. Mr. Dennis Davis and a Mr. Joe Johnson listed to testify in this bill. Mr. Johnson? Okay. Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience that will wish to testify on behalf of this bill? Okay. Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As stated, my name is Dennis Davis. I own a consulting firm by the name of Metafrazo, and it helps companies create sustainable, replicatable veteran hiring initiatives. Most of the time, HR doesn't have very many veterans in it, if any, and they're the ones that are controlling the hiring processes. So to be able to help an organization hire more veterans and see the value is extremely important. I have over 15 years of hiring experience in the private sector, seen hundreds of thousands of resumes, thousands of interviews, hundreds of hires. I certainly understand that side of the fence. But I also understand the military side. I enlisted in 1991 in the United States Navy, was in for just under 4 years. I'm a service-connected disabled veteran. I got out with a back injury, never thought I'd be back in, and ended up after 9/11 going back into the Air Force Reserve. Deployed twice in support of Operations Iraqi and Enduring Freedom. I earned my commission before deploying the first time. I was at Dover Air Force Base, where I saw just under 300 casualties come through at the mortuary in just under 90 days. Also also did a tour in Afghanistan, 5 months, left on 3 weeks' notice. So I've been on and off of active orders no less than eight times in the time that I've been involved with the military. So I understand the military piece, both enlisted and officer, two different branches, active and reserve, how the deployments on the reserve and guard impact employers here in the state of Minnesota. So this bill is of particular importance to me and being able to help with the language and make sure that we got it right. It was modeled after the Work Opportunity Tax Credits, WOTC at the federal level, which is, I believe, since sunsetted. And so we're going to explain why this is important today. Why this is important, Representative Wills talked about the unemployment rates, and those were actually from November of 13 was the latest information we had combined with the current rate. So 5% is almost 50% higher than the current rate, and then the post 9/11 is 2.5 times the current rate. We did just get some, I just got some information from January nationally on the unemployment rate. In January, the national unemployment rate for veterans went from 6.9 to 7.9%. So this is not just a Minnesota problem, but we continue to trend higher than the national piece. And the regular average is 5.7 nationally for unemployment. And this was despite in January adding 257,000 jobs. So we added 257,000 jobs nationally, and yet the veteran unemployment rate spiked by a full percentage point. So it's not a small move when it comes to veterans. So this is an issue not only nationally, but certainly here in Minnesota. So why is this important? We've talked about this, and I guess I've heard different comments from different individuals over the last couple years. Well, many of the veterans are returning to Minnesota, and they are going to college. They're using their GI Bill benefits, which is great. That's what we want them to do. But what is the other really high unemployment rate group in the states and in Minnesota in particular? It's new college grads. So you take these people out of the service, they go back to school, and then they become looked at in an employment sense as somebody that has graduated from college with no experience, and you're here to get your first real job. Well, that's not the case because they serve 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years in the military, and then they just look like a really old college graduate. So to be able to help employers, incentivize employers to do the right thing, and as they see their performance and their companies benefit from hiring these people, they're going to want to hire more of them, which in turn is going to lower that unemployment rate. So the stereotypes of hiring veterans, again, I've been on the other side of this hiring desk many times. I've had these types of things said to me. But the stereotypes is that we're broken. We need to be fixed. We're violent. That's throughout the media. And PTSD, with every organization I talk to, PTSD comes up. They don't understand us. They don't understand post-traumatic stress and that it's not caused by the military. It's not PMSD, post-military service disorder. It's post-traumatic stress. So any one of you, Lord willing, you don't have this happen today, but with the weather outside, you could get in a car accident on the way home and go through trauma with that and develop PTSD. It's not tied to the military. We're just really good at causing trauma, depending on the situation that we're in. So employers don't understand this. They're scared of us, and that leads to a higher unemployment rate. As Representative Lesh pointed out, we don't have large active duty bases in our area, so it's mostly people. I believe that you're in the reserve component, sir, and it's mostly people that are guard and reserve that are part-time. They rarely see us in uniform, so it's different. They don't understand the military component in an employment sense here. So most of these stereotypes are simply not true, or there's a very small grain of truth to them. This tax credit would help incentivize, again, employers to do the right thing, to hire those types of people, or give greater consideration for them, and to be able to help them have them move on in their transition. I'd like you to do something interactive with me, and it's really quick, but draw a stool with three legs on it, if you will, and label the legs employment, PTSD, and suicide. I'd love to see anybody draw. Just anybody would be great. We talk about employment, but we don't always talk about the other two issues with PTSD and suicide. The national suicide rate for veterans is 22 a day. We've lost more veterans in the last year over 8,000. We've lost more than 1,200 more in the last year than we have in Iraq and Afghanistan combat combined. So we lose more veterans each year than we've lost in 14 years of war. That's unacceptable. In Minnesota,
Mr. Davis, yes. How much longer do you have for testimony?
2 minutes.
Okay. Please conclude.
In Minnesota, we've had 27.7 per 100,000 veterans 2005 to 2011. 2011 was 31 per 100,000. The civilian rate was 13.3. I can't say that it's caused by unemployment, but it is certainly correlated to the unemployment piece. This is not, as Representative Will said, simply bipartisan. It's really a nonpartisan issue, and it should be revenue neutral. I know that we can't take into account the cost, the return on investment with this in the formulation, but it is should be revenue neutral. And then I'll just add, as a part of the previous bill, South Dakota also doesn't have a state income tax, so almost all the states surrounding us don't tax pay or retirement pay. This would help bring more veterans here and incentivize to get jobs. And Minnesota already doesn't tax active duty pay or reserve and guard pay. So all of these things combined would make this an important step in the right direction.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. We'll go to Mr. Johnson, then the Department of Revenue does want to make a few comments. Let's go to Johnson's testimony, then we'll go with questions. And first on my list will be Representative Loeffler. Mr. Johnson, please state your name and who you represent for record, please, sir.
Thank you. My name is Joe Johnson with Trust Vets. I'm here today to share the perspective of a civilian. I did not serve the United States Armed Forces, but through my career, I have the great privilege of serving its veterans. And what I can tell you from personal and professional experience is that the vast majority of veterans want nothing more than an opportunity to continue serving our communities here at home as painters and plumbers and bankers and dentists and employees across the state of Minnesota. There's obviously a disproportionate number of veterans unemployed at this point, and I think it's a matter of fiduciary responsibility that we see this through for our veterans. These are the men and women who have given greatly and sacrificed greatly of themselves and their families. They have been steeped in training that has enhanced their ability to work in a team environment. They have a better appreciation of chain of command. They have a unique appreciation for getting the job done the very first time. And I believe if veterans wish to continue to serve us here at home, we'd be fools not to let them. They have the training, they have the skills, and they want to live out a successful career in a free country, a little bit of their own making. And I believe if we position veterans for success, it will lead to better business for all of us. And so I think it's in the interest of the community as a whole to put these men and women back to work. We've invested a tremendous amount of taxpayer dollars into their training and their abilities and their skills, and we need to maximize the return on that by putting them in a position to continue serving us here at home. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We'll start off with Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wills, I noted in the Revenue Department's analysis that 21% of currently employed veterans will change jobs annually. And I understand the testimony that was given about how hard it is for people returning from you know, an active duty site and or just newly trained have problems getting or who are long-term unemployed get jobs. But I don't understand, you know, why it would also be a priority to just help an established veteran change jobs. And it appears that there's quite a bit of changeover. And so I'm just wondering how that fits in the priorities here of this group.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler. And just a couple of things about the language of the bill. One reason why I have the credit going to the employer as opposed to the veteran is so that it will help prevent job hopping and having the veteran go from job to job to get necessarily a financial benefit, because the benefit that the veteran is seeking is the job itself. So that's one consideration. And then one other piece about the language is that it's looking at making sure that the employer is not hiring a veteran to just get that credit and then lay them off and maybe rehire them later on, because they only get the opportunity for that credit one time per veteran. So I don't know if that answers your question, but those are a couple of things that I took into consideration to try to avoid job hopping by a veteran, but to ensure that all of the veterans who are looking for work have those opportunities available to them, and that there's an incentive there for the employers to hire them.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wills. Actually, I was more interested in the priority because, you know, we have a lot of veterans who are well established in their careers, and like other people, will just change jobs because there's better pay or some other reason, but they're not encountering the obstacles that we heard testimony on, and why we would want to have an extra incentive with a pretty large price tag in this bill for people who are just not suffering from long-term employment, not suffering from military-related need to change jobs and adjust to civilian life and get trained or a disability. But why just a well-established veteran changing a job because of, for their own personal interest, why their employer should get a benefit?
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loeffler. And I just have a couple comments, and then Dennis Davis also has a few comments to add. And I appreciate that clarification as well. And the bill does provide for three separate tax credits. And to kind of address that as well, $3,000 credit for a disabled veteran, a $1,500 credit for an unemployed veteran, and a $500 credit for any other veteran seeking employment. And really, I believe that you're going to be seeing veterans getting hired who are looking for work, who aren't currently employed, and who are looking to find a job here in Minnesota. So that's I believe, where you're going to see the majority of veterans who would allow this credit to be taken advantage of. But I know Dennis Davis had a few additional comments.
Mr. Davis, briefly, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler. The credit at the $500 level is primarily what those that you're discussing are going to be taking advantage of. The $1,500 credit would not be applicable in that case because that is only for people that are unemployed. And then the $3,000 credit is, again, for disabled. And a large percent of the disabled veterans aren't going to be job hopping. They're going to find a job and like it and be able to stay at that job and continue a career that way. So I think that it's going to be the smaller number of those. That's specifically the way we wrote it. And then if a veteran does leave one job and goes to another, that other job then remains open, and so it does create another opportunity. So it's not a zero-sum game, I guess, if you will.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. I understand the direction that they're attempting to go with the bill, but I'm going to turn the clock back a little bit. A family member was discharged from the military and went to work for a Minneapolis company that was national in scope. And I'm looking at the language on 110 where it says the employee is a resident of Minnesota on the date of hire. The situation I'm about to describe, and admittedly it's anecdotal, but was a Minnesota resident on date of hire, but almost immediately was put in charge of a region for that company that was Oregon, Northern California, and Washington, and that's where he spent the rest of his career. And my thought as I look at this is that being that we're attempting to provide an opportunity for people who are Minnesota residents, the only question I'm raising is that maybe the author and the people you're working with might look at that question of date of hire, that perhaps we want to make sure that when they're hired, and by the way, that was always worked for the same company. He just was put in charge of that region, and that's where he spent the rest of his career. So the question is, wouldn't you not want them to not only the company receive the tax credit, but have that employee perhaps work in Minnesota for a given period of time or something, being that it's Minnesota tax dollars that the employer is benefiting from. I just offer that as a suggestion because I think that is a bit of a loophole, because we have a lot of nationally based corporations here, and when they hire, they may or may not end up working in Minnesota, but they would still work for that Minnesota company.
Representative Wills.
Just maybe a comment if they want to respond.
Representative Wills. Thank you, Chair Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Carlson. I appreciate you pointing that out because you're correct that our intention is to be hiring Minnesota residents, Minnesota veterans, and keeping them here in the state of Minnesota as taxpaying citizens. And just a thought, you know, as you were talking, that one thing we could do to amend the language, and this might address what you're drawing our attention to, is on that line or somewhere in that line, just having language that clarifies that the employee would have to be a resident of Minnesota on the date of hire and also still be a resident at the close of the tax year that this credit would be available, to create a little bit more coverage and continuity. And that's something we can discuss more later, and I appreciate that because there's always room for improvement.
Sure.
Yeah, and I don't, that might be language that would work, Mr. Chairman, but that's something that perhaps could be worked on, because I think our goal would be retention, you know, as well as providing the opportunity for hire.
Very good point. Thank you, Chair Carlson. Any other questions? If not, the department would like to make a few comments as a resource on this bill. Thank you, gentlemen. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Just a very brief comment that I just wanted to have people think about, and that is, as employers or others would begin to hire veterans, we always have to think about what sort of documentation would we ask for from the employer. And so I know that as folks within our department were trying to think through this bill, one of the things were, what type of personal information would we be asking for from employers to document that they've hired veterans? And this was, I don't think this is a, you know, I don't think this is a roadblock. This bill is much bigger than this. But it is something that we just wanted to make sure that you guys thought about, you know, when all of a sudden we get these other data privacy concerns coming in and saying, why are you guys asking for this information? I just wanted you guys to know that we haven't figured out how we would administer this or what type of verification we would ask for. But I did want you to know that we were having a conversation on how this would be implemented.
Thank you. Any questions for the department? Mr. Cummings? I have a message that I would like you to, Mr. Cummings, to take back to the commissioner very seriously, and that is, I'm sure members of this committee and folks in this room saw what happened over the weekend with TurboTax.
Yes.
And some security issues there, and I think the commissioner acted very swiftly, very decisively, and I simply appreciate that, that we were able to get that back online. Just for the record, the department's computer systems were not hacked or anything as far as that goes, but the department is very vigilant in overseeing some disturbing trends, and I think acted very decisively and took care of it very quickly, and I think that's a huge issue. So if you could get maybe a little thank you back to the commissioner, I'd appreciate that.
I will.
Okay, to the bill, House File 10. Any other questions? I don't see any other questions. Any questions? Representative Wills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dennis Davis just had a comment on the point brought up by Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Davis?
Mr. Chair and members, it is a very valid point. Because we modeled this in the language after the federal WOCT tax credits, which required very little in the way of verification, I would suggest that we could do the same thing as the WOTC tax credits at the federal level and model the verification after that. So the system is already in place. Employers were used to be doing that. So there should not be a large add-on fiscally to be able to be able to verify these individuals. It's something that employers used to be doing in their HR department. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. Any other questions for the department? Representative Wills, why don't you have your people talk to Mr. Cummings' people and see if we can come to some conclusions here. on that issue. So, okay, we'll lay House File 10 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Davis, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Cummings, and Representative Wills. Item next, Representative Wills moves House File 412. And I have down here Mr. Jeff, and then Bruce Adams. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify before Mr. Adams or Jeff? Okay, Representative Wills, if you could please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And House File 412 takes a look at fundraising events by nonprofit groups, and specifically addressing the window of time that nonprofit groups would be considered tax exempt when they're doing their fundraising. And currently in statute, you'll see on the language of the bill itself on lines 2.4 and 2.5, the window is if the events are conducted for more than 5 days but less than 30 days, and we're looking at increasing that to more than 10 days but less than 30 days, and specifically because we're thinking about how these events play out at county fairs and with 4-H clubs, and several county fairs are longer than that 5-day window. So that's why we're looking at changing the language, and I have Jeff Weisenthal and Bruce Adams here to help explain why this change is necessary.
Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
I'm Bruce Adams. I live in Burnsville, and I'm a I'm representative from 56B in Burnsville. And I'm here on behalf of Dakota County 4-H Federation as a financial advisor to them in an adult capacity.
Mr. Adams, you're a representative from Burnsville?
No. I am a constituent of 56B. Well, just to identify where I'm from.
You know, it's my point not to know who freshmen are, but I thought I knew them a little little better than that. So, okay, please continue.
My reaction was insane.
Jeff and I have been involved in the 4-H program for a number of years. I'm a second-generation 4-H member in my family, my daughter third. I no longer have anybody directly involved, but I have found it to be so beneficial to myself and my daughter, and her capacity is becoming an active and good citizen, improving her ability to function well in school, especially in the area of public speaking, that it is such an asset that I continue to volunteer my activities there. And you will find that when Jeff introduces himself, he'll say the same thing, that he is already past being a parent, but we have stayed involved. We are looking for this change because it would be clearly advantageous to our organization, but there are a number of organizations across the state that would benefit too. Specifically in Dakota County, our fair starts with the opening on Saturday and it concludes the following Sunday, so the 10-day window would fit us just fine. The gates open for paying constituents in the following the first Monday, and the activity that is generated is very beneficial to the youth. It presents a good opportunity for the 4-H program to present itself to the suburban and urban dwellers in our area. We are, as probably no surprise to you, sort of an agrarian county on the south end and clearly a very suburban county on the north end. And we are continuing to evolve and embrace the diversity that is becoming present in our county, and any amount of funds that we can retain would certainly be beneficial to us. The funds that would be directly involved, very briefly, would be the funds that we generate from our 4-H malt stands and our 4-H lunch stands over the course of the running of the fair. The Dakota County is gracious enough to assist us with office space and certainly administrative staff through the University of Minnesota Extension Program, but the funds that we use directly for the benefit of the youth come primarily from the lunch stand malt stand net proceeds, the philanthropic activity of other people in the area, and a small enrollment fee to each individual. And Jeff can fill in more, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. And you said this would benefit 4-H clubs?
4-H clubs, very specifically, it would be extremely beneficial to all of the DeKalb County 4-H clubs. But across the state, because some of our counties are fairly substantial in size, some of them actually operate two county fairs, so the joint amount of time between those two county fairs is also greater than the 5-day window which is presently in there.
Just for full disclosure, I was president of the Sumner Sunbeams 4-H Club, the largest club in Fillmore County.
Just Southern so, way.
So I may have to recuse myself from this one. I'm not sure. Is there anybody in the audience really cares about this? Any opposition or anything? Okay, please, we'll go to, let's Representative Carlson, Chair Carlson.
I was just going to ask you, Mr. Chairman, was that the only club in Fulmer
County? Chair Carlson. I was the only one running for president, it's more like it. But at that time, I believe there was 20 to 30 clubs, and I think there's maybe 9, the Bloomfield, Cloverleafs, the, you know, the whole bunch of them.
Mr. Chairman, I was kind of thinking of my grandmother always referred to my father as her favorite son-in-law, but he was the only one.
Okay. we had epic softball battles, and I have to say for the record that the Mabel Busy Bees were our arch nemesis. They were the ones that we had trouble with, or the Bloomfield Cloverleafs. But, it's really gone down because everybody, you know, it used to be there's a farm family on 160 acres. Now it's like 560 acres, and so we lost a lot of that. But I do love 4-H, and you had to bring like a project or something to the fair to stay in, so we'd bring flower arrangements or something so we could play softball. No, it's very important to learn of those flower arrangements and the importance of that.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't realize that we were going to have a meltdown with the committee over my comment.
Thank you, Chair Carlson, I think. Okay, with that, Jeff, how do you pronounce your last name, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jeff Wisensell. I currently serve as simply a project leader in the state or in our county, having served 10 years as the financial director prior to Bruce. I would just offer a couple
of things. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I'd just like to offer a couple of things. Many of you have seen positively about 4-H, positive things there. I'd just like to report that 4-H is one of these positive development of youth comprehensive findings for 4-H. It was completed by the Tufts University, and in there that report, and these are things also found in Minnesota, 4 times more likely to make contributions to their communities from grades 7 to 12, are 2 times more likely to be civically active, grades 8 to 12, 2 times more likely to have healthier choices, 2 times more likely to engage in STEM programs, and 4-H girls are 2 times more likely and nearly 3 times more likely grades 10 and 12 to take part in science programs. In 2013, there were 65,000 Minnesota youth participated in the Extension Youth Development Program, and that was spread over 25% in the farm areas, 36 rural towns under 10,000, 33 town and cities, 4% suburbs and 2% in our cities. I think one of the numbers here that I think from a volunteer standpoint in that why we are pushing actually to have that opportunity to utilize the money at our local clubs is one of the hallmarks of 4-H in its strong volunteer base. In 2013, nearly 11,000 adult volunteers contributed more than 1 million hours of service valued at $23 million to support the positive development of Minnesota's youth. In addition, these volunteers stay with the programs for years from 1 to 54. I'm not quite there yet. Most of them commit several years of hard work. I would offer that my daughters are actually fourth generation. The 4-H program is well over 100 years involved in the state. And I can speak to my 3 daughters. 2 of them have returned back to Minnesota having been educated elsewhere, serving in capacity as a pharmacist at Mayo and also an ICU nurse at Mayo. So the 4-H program extends hugely. I appreciate the positive reception that we've heard from the chair, and I'm open for any questions.
Okay, again, is there anyone that wishes to testify against the 4-H? Probably one of the most influential institutions on the chair's formation of behavior. Anyone wish to testify against 4-H? Okay, any questions? Chair Earhart and then McDonald. Chair Earhart.
I've just been trying to get one established in my area, but I haven't been able to. I don't know if there's anybody here that can help me with that.
Mr. Wiesenthal?
Say that again.
I was trying to get a 4-H club established in my area.
Diana.
What?
Edina, that's Hennepin County?
Yeah, Hennepin County, yes.
Yeah. Contact the extension office in Hennepin County, and they'll put you in touch.
Thank you.
Chair Earhart?
You can go right through the website. I'm sure they have.
Chair McDonald?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe a question for Mr. Michaels. In the brief, it says that it would increase the duration for nonprofit groups. We have a situation in Delano where Delano has, if you haven't already known, the oldest and largest 4th of July parade in the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Little plug there, if you don't mind. Shamelessly, of course. Sometimes we need 5 days instead of four. And, of course, the 4-H are involved, and so are many, many other organizations. Does this bill apply to a situation like that where a five-day event is necessary? Because right now law only allows a four-day event like that for nonprofit group.
Now let's go to Ms. Dahl. But first of all, it's Mr. Michael, not Michaels. I'm kind of touchy on names. I know not why. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, the four-day exclusion was changed to in 1998. Originally, it was a four-day exclusion. It was changed to a five-day exclusion in 1998, and this would take it to 10-day, and yes, it would cover the situation that you're talking if you needed 6 days.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair Davids, for correcting me on Mr. Michael.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I actually represent one of the 2% of the cities that has an urban 4-H program. But I have to say, you know, I have some concerns about this would cost us about $1 million over 3 years, more than that as it goes on. And, you know, what I find is that the most successful and the most enriched and able to be successful for their kids' programs are the ones who actually would most benefit from this. And the ones that really struggle serving high-risk kids and families where parents, you know, are mobile or work double jobs and that sort of thing can't. And I can see it even in my own community where there's one school that has run, I don't know if they still do, but in the past they ran a very successful concession at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. And it was just amazing what they could make with all those volunteers who could figure out how to get, you know, way out to that suburban location and would work that concession regularly on those fall weekends. And yet I know another school in my city that the volunteers, you know, were just as dedicated and cared as much about their kids, and they raised $300 selling tomato plants a quarter apiece. And, you know, it's really hard to me to kind of sit on this committee and think about, like, which youth groups are we benefiting to be able to run an enterprise for 10 days. It says you have a tremendous amount of infrastructure and kids and parents who are willing to make that happen. And I don't take anything away from that. I think they're very successful and they offer wonderful opportunities for kids. But I'm just as equally interested in the communities and the schools, and whether they're rural or suburban or city, that really struggle because they don't have that kind of capacity to even organize and put the dollars together. And so I'm just encouraging those of you who represent the 4-H and others to think about how could we do this to support a broader range of youth groups in their success, because to run something for 10 days is really a lot of work and takes some real capacity and probably some economic means within the community you represent.
Any other comments? Mr. Wiesenthal, to the Loeffler point.
I could offer at least a response that certainly from the 4-H perspective, being in all 87 counties, it positions us much better to extend that reach. And I would say that, you know, clearly in all the The way that we approach programs, we're very open. We even have, in some cases, scholarships for people that can't pay dues. We, you know, dues is not a barrier to our organization. And I think because of the civic community focus, we actually do drive a lot of people that have an opportunity to 4-H. We can't be everything to everybody, but I think we're certainly there as part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Loeffler.
Thank you. I just wanted us all to start wrestling with that, if we're going to use tax policy to help youth groups.
Chair Knobloch.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have, a technical question for Ms. Dalton, and that is if we do this, and I see on page 2, line 5 of the bill, we change the 5 to 10. Do we want to, on page 2, line 3 of the bill, change the 24 to 19, or is there some other reason that we'd want to keep it at 24?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch, those two dates are actually not really tied together. One really has to do with the leases, and using the example that had been brought up earlier, a lease at the Renaissance Festival is a six-week lease because it's, but there's only 13 fundraising days within that six-week lease because the Renaissance Festival is only actually open for 13 days during that six-week period. So they aren't really necessarily tied to each other. So I don't know that just changing one makes you want to change the other.
All right.
Chair Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've also been involved with 4-H and am still currently involved with 4-H a lot, as Representative McDonald and I both judge photography on 4-H for quite a regular amount of time. And if you haven't been to the Steele County Fair, that is the best county fair in the state of Minnesota.
Next to Houston County, I think.
And it runs for 6 days, so it goes beyond that five-day period, so that's a benefit. But I think Representative Loeffler's comments are also very valid, but I would argue that because the smaller groups have already been given this tax incentive or lack of having to have the personnel to actually impart trying to collect all of the sales tax, that we have already taken some of that into consideration as well, and this is just extending that to the larger groups that have not been able to afford that. So I think whereas we need to be conscious of that, I think we've already taken that under consideration as well. So just future thought.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments or questions on this bill? So Representative Wills renews her motion that House File 412 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, about tomorrow, we have a joint taxes and property tax meeting, so you might want to get here to get a chair because it'll be packed. It's in this room, right? And we're doing an energy study from revenue, sustainable forest report from the legislative auditor is on our agenda tomorrow. So with that, for the good of the order, we will. Any other questions or comments? A good government all the time. We are adjourned.